The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
Yes, it's that time of the week again where we start putting on the boots and we start doing our warm-up, because here in the studio it's wall-to-wall rugby league for the next hour or so. I'm joined alongside me this time by James Gordon from loverugbyleague.com. James, good to have you with us.
Good evening, Dave. Good to be here.
And, well, what we're going to be discussing tonight, well, it's a packed show. We're having an Easter special here on the Final Hooter. So we're going to be dissecting how we think that the opening third of the season has virtually gone, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's it. It sort of creeps up. It still feels like the start of the season, but before we know it, we'll be into the business end.
I know, we're nearly playoff time already. No, I'm only kidding. You know, but we're gonna be going through and dissecting where we think teams have gone well, where they've not done so well. We'll have a look at a couple of the news stories that are happening, and we've also got some guests as well. So over the course of the show, we'll be hearing from Widnes boss Dennis Betts. We'll be hearing from St Helens standoff Lance O'Hire, who was once upon a time the forgotten man of Langtree Park, but seems to be pushing his way into contention a heck of a lot more these days. We'll also be hearing from Wigan coach Sean Wayne ahead of the big derby match on Good Friday. Not the biggest one, according to us at Radio General anyway. That's going to be between Widnes and Warrington, and there'll be full coverage of that as per usual. And we'll also be dipping our toes in the Championship. We've got Paul Rowley of Lee Centurions giving his reaction to a real topsy-turvy game when the Centurions travelled over to Halifax in a top of the table clash in the Championship. Right, shall we crack on? Always a good place to start, isn't it? So let's have a look, and I suppose first of all, James, after 8 games of the season, St Helens out on top unbeaten.
Yeah, I think it's come good for them, hasn't it, this season with Nathan Brown. I think this is what you probably expected them to do last season when Nathan Brown first got in. They struggled with injuries last year, but they also didn't perhaps have the key players in the right positions, or the right players in the key positions. I mean, you mentioned Lance Hire there. You know, he's been considerably better this season than he was last, and that might be because he's been able to play in a relatively sustained position rather than being chopped around. I mean, I know Lance quite well, actually, and he's a nice bloke. I think the problem he has is he's got this utility tag, hasn't he, and that means that he's dragged over everywhere. If there's a gap at hooker, he'll play hooker. If there's a gap at fullback, he'll play fullback. If there's a gap at scrum half, he'll play there. Whereas I think this season St Helens have got a steady lineup, haven't they, in place, and that's contributed to their success. And then also you've got the fact that actually when they were struggling with injuries last season, they blooded all these youngsters who have now got invaluable Super League experience under their belt, which means that when they played Leeds a few weeks ago with it wasn't a full strength team, they had these youngsters who came in who were already battle hardened, who managed to grind out the result.
I've been impressed with the way that St Helens are starting to get that knack that they had a few years ago, aren't they, of never giving in and always tending to come back. I mean, for long spells of the game they played against Castleford were perhaps the better side, but they hung in there, they found a way back into the game and ultimately snatched it.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, I was at Warrington last Friday, so I didn't see the St Helens game live, but, you know, that's a sign of a champion. It's the old cliche, isn't it? It's a sign of the champion team who finds a way to win whatever the circumstance. I mean, Nathan Brown teams are sort of renowned for starting very well and for having two-thirds of a good season. I think at Huddersfield, every year he was at Huddersfield, you know, they were like a house on fire for the first, you know, two-thirds of the season, and then they sort of petered out come the business end. And it'll be interesting to see whether that happens to St Helens this year. Obviously, you look at teams like Leeds and teams like Wigan and even Warrington, perhaps in the past couple of seasons, have sort of restrained themselves a little bit during the regular season, knowing that, you know, at the end of the day, if they can finish in that top four or five teams, they've got a real shot at the playoffs. And, you know, you saw Leeds win it from fifth, didn't they, a few seasons ago. And I think since Leeds did that the first time, I think a lot of the attitudes at the top of the league has sort of changed.
You mentioned Leeds, and they too have had a really good start to the season. They've only slipped up against St Helens and had a draw to their name. Other than that, 6 big victories and the best defence in Super League.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Leeds the few times I've seen them. Obviously, like I say, they lost to St Helens, but I think St Helens and Leeds are the two standout teams in the competition. I think I've seen every single one so far live, and I think St Helens and Leeds are head and shoulders above everybody else at this moment in time, and it's going to be the thing with those clubs is they've been there and done it. You know, they know the route to the grand final. They know how to win the big finals, and you know, you look at both of those teams, they're all built on strong academy culture. You know, a lot of the players have come through the Leeds system, a lot of the players come through the St Helens system, and that's perhaps where, I mean, Wigan are the same, and that's perhaps a weakness Warrington have got or have had over recent years, is they've not perhaps been able to generate that quality in house as yet.
Looking at the way that Leeds have gone, and interesting to note that Jamie Peacock's reached 500 games in his career, which is a massive amount, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Super League's best player is called a man of steel at the end of each year, and I don't think there's anyone who epitomises that more than Jamie Peacock. I mean, last season he was phenomenal. You know, I think he got injured for a spell, didn't he? Sort of two thirds through the season, and I think if he hadn't got injured, I think he'd have given Danny Brough a real run for the Man of Steel award last season. You know, I mean, I spoke to him last season, and he was sort of, I mean, obviously he wants to get into the off field side of the game, doesn't he? After his career, he's really passionate about that, and he was sort of saying, I feel a bit guilty, you know, I'm sort of the best forward in the league at the moment, and it shouldn't be me, it should be James Graham, it should be Sam Burgess, but obviously the way Super League is at the moment, those players are applying their trade elsewhere. But you know, to reach 500 appearances in what is a tough sport, I mean, you know, as much as we love rugby league, you know, you really couldn't stomach playing it by some of the tackles and some of the hits that go in.
It's like superhuman efforts, isn't it?
Yeah, and to withstand that for such a long, and you know, Peacock's not just done it at any club, he's done it at the best clubs. You know, he's been at Bradford when they were at the peak of the game, and he's been at Leeds, so he's been at the top level, the very top level, for the whole of his career. You know, and that in itself is a massive achievement.
Massive achievement at the start of the season. Castleford Tigers sitting in third. I mean, they've had a really good start, haven't they? Daryl Powell's got them playing an exciting brand of rugby league.
Yeah, I mean, it's a measure of how well they've done that they were so gutted to lose to St Helens, you know, on Friday, and you know, they've turned over some good teams, and you know, it's a real shot in the arm for sort of British coaches as well, isn't it? I mean, Daryl Powell, you know, had some very good years at Featherstone, and he's come into Castleford at the back end of last season, and the timing of that appointment, you know, it might be a coincidence, it might have been, you know, something Castleford had worked out themselves, but the fact that he's come in sort of, you know, what did he come in about, two thirds of last season, maybe,
something,
or halfway,
like that,
last,
yeah,
season,
yeah.
He's then had the rest of the season to analyse the situation, get the club sorted, make a few signings, and really stamp his authority this season. And I mean, you know, the achievement that they've achieved so far this season is excellent. No one would have predicted that. And you know, and talk about players, none more so than Liam Finn. You know, he's brought him up to Super League with him from Featherstone. You know, he played for Ireland at the World Cup, and
he's not looked out of place, has he?
No, and I think I read something earlier this week that he's actually got the most try assists in Super League, I think, Finn has. So
he was the Championship's best kept secret, wasn't he, for all those,
yeah,
years?
I mean, and the thing is that's what this is, what it's all about. It should all be about the rugby. You know, forget everything else, forget all the talk about licensing and stuff like that. What we want to see is coaches like Powell having an impact on clubs like Castleford and getting them mixing in with the big boys. You know, we don't want it to be a procession every year with the big clubs. We want teams like Castleford to get along and, you know, really give it to the teams. And you want Super League to be the sort of league where if Castleford are at home, you think they could beat anyone. And you know, we talk about the level of competition across the division and compare it to the NRL, and we think that it's inferior because, you know, there's blowout scores here and there. If teams like Castleford can step up, or other teams can follow Castleford's lead, then obviously that's going to close the comp down and obviously ultimately result in more competitive matches.
Wigan Warriors sitting in fourth at the moment, 5 wins from their opening 7 games, but they've not really been firing on all cylinders yet, have they?
You know what, for Wigan is, I mean, Wigan will be delighted that people are saying that about them. You know, I would never write Wigan off. I think I actually predicted Wigan to win the grand final sort of towards the back end of last season when everyone was writing them off, because you just, you know, the club, there's a winning culture in that club. You know, they're built around, like I mentioned earlier, they're built around players that have come through their system, through their academy, the people who know about the history and the heritage and stuff like that. And you know, Wigan are probably sat there thinking, well, hang on, we've lost, you know, they've lost some top quality players in the close season. They've lost Tompkins, they've lost Richards, you know, and yet they've still won 5 out of their 7 games. You know, they lost that one to Huddersfield, which was maybe a bit of an oddball because it was the week before they were going to Australia. you know, they lost to Casford as well, and you know, we talked about how good Casford have been, but you know, Wigan are still up there, and despite having this weakened squad, as people are calling it, you know, they're still going to compete, and it's still going to be tough to beat them.
It could still go all the way, couldn't it, to be honest?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the thing with Wigan is they sell five players, you look, and they've got five quality youngsters coming through to replace them, and that happens. How many players have Wigan brought through who've either moved on to bigger and better things, or, well, not necessarily bigger and better, but they've moved on wherever, but there's always someone lying in wait. You know, you forget that at the end of 2012 they lost the likes of Brett Finch, you know, George Carmont, they lost a couple of players like that, you know, four or five big players. Lulawai was another one. Yet last season they did the double, you know,
and nobody tipped them for that either,
and,
did they?
And nobody's tipped them for that, and that's where I just sort of think, you know, you write Wigan off at your peril in any competition, in any game. You know, it's a brave man who's going to write Wigan off.
Widnes Vikings, they must be getting a nosebleed sitting in fifth so far up Super League. But it's been a really good start. I've been impressed with how competitive Widnes have been this season. They're certainly going it better than last year.
Well, I mean, it's ironic. Obviously, the licensing system gets a lot of criticism, and Widnes are probably the only shining light of that system, you know. But I think there's... But I'm conscious not to put it all down to the licensing system, though, because I think... Actually, I think that's just a bit of a coincidence, or not a coincidence, but a consequence of the licence system is. But what's happened with Widnes is they've stuck with Dennis Betts. You know, they've allowed him time to build in a plan, and you might say that without licensing, perhaps he wouldn't have been able to do that. But the thing with Widnes is they've not really recruited that heavily between seasons, and it's enabled them to build quite a team spirit and quite a togetherness. You know, they're bringing academy players through, which we've already said is quite important. Not only, you know, for salary cap reasons, but because, you know, that sets a foundation for your club and for your team. And, you know, the likes of Jack Owens and Alex Gerrard have been, you know, standout performers for Widnes this season. And, you know, I suppose if you look at the seven, they were a bit disappointing last weekend, I thought, but if you look at their seven games they've had, if you'd have offered Dennis Betts five wins from them first seven at the start of the season, he probably would have bit your hand off. And I think looking at the fixtures, they've probably picked up two wins you wouldn't have thought. So I'd imagine even Dennis was probably sat there at the start of the season thinking, well, if we can win three of this first seven, I'll be quite happy. And for them to have done five, you know, is quite good. And he'll be wanting to make sure that they build on that, really, because they've got two tough fixtures this weekend.
Hull FC, they're sitting down in sixth position. They've won four and lost four, and I suppose it's been a tough transition for Lee Radford and his side, and him taking over into the big job there, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, well, Hull have picked up, haven't they, the last couple of weeks? I think I went to see them. I saw them against Widnes. I saw them against Warrington, actually, and they were very unlucky not to beat Warrington. And then I think, was it the week after they got beat 7-0 at home by Widnes, which was a...
That's a bizarre score.
Which was a...
That's got to be result of the year so far in Super League.
That was an incredible game. Well, we could probably have a show about that game on its own, but I mean, I was there, and Hull just... Well, they didn't look very good, but they had crisis talks after that game. He's changed things up, and then I think if they beat Salford fairly comprehensively. I mean, okay, they lost to Salford in the Challenge Cup, but I don't think Lee Radford would necessarily mind that. You know, Hull had their big day out at Wembley last year, didn't they? And I think he's probably thinking, well, actually, we need to make sure we're solid in this top eight this year. And then, they beat Huddersfield last week. So the signs are showing that maybe, you know, they're going in the right direction. They've still got this massive problem, haven't they, at halfback, where they've tried so many different options over the past couple of years, and they've never really clamp down on anything. You know, they had Holdsworth, he's come and gone. They've got Miller and Rankin in now. Are they the best options? Richard Horn still floats around, and
they've certainly looked good the last couple of weeks, though, haven't they? Both Miller and Rankin, they've done the business.
I think Rankin was playing at fullback when I seen them, and you know, I think maybe, you know, maybe it's taken Radford a bit of time to realise what the best combination is. It's like anything, you've got to stick with it and try it for a bit, you know, to see how it works. And I think a lot's going to depend on the halfbacks and how successful they are across the season. You know, if Rankin and Miller can strike up, because that's what it's about, isn't it? It's about your two halfbacks having a partnership. You see it at Widnes with Brown and Meller before Meller got injured. You know, Smith and Green at Wigan. You know, St Helens are better this season because they've got Hire and Walsh at halfback. Warrington are having a few problems at the moment because they've sort of chopped and changed theirs without Breers. So that's quite important. That's your foundation in the middle.
It's all about duos, isn't it? Alan Pace, two Ronnies. No, no, I've got something completely different there. Warrington Wolves tucked in behind them. They have been really inconsistent, but again, you mentioned about a large turnover of players at Wigan. Warrington have had to cope with something similar, haven't they?
Yeah, the problem with Warrington is they've not necessarily got the replacements coming through. You know, they lost Gareth Carvell and Adrian Morley, who are two, you know, pretty fierce and pretty top level forwards. And have they replaced them? I mean, Roy Astarzi come in. I've not overly convinced by him so far. Are there any blockbusting props coming through the academy? Well, you know, I've seen Glenn Riley a couple of times. They signed Anthony England. You know, are either of them at the level?
I think they were hoping with Anthony England he'd be like the next Chris Hill, because they snapped him up from the Championship, well, didn't they? And he'd gone pretty well at Featherstone.
Well, that's it. And Wigan did the same with Sam Hopkins, didn't they? And it's not quite worked out like that. And I think I mean, no disrespect to Chris Hill, obviously he's a great player, and I think he probably would have done it even now. But it's a lot easier for a full-time rookie, if you like, to come in and slot into a winning team than it is to slot into a team that's struggling a little bit. And I think that's where Warrington are maybe struggling at the moment. Braze is obviously a big miss, and I think the big problem Warrington have got is they've signed Russell with the idea that he'll play fullback. Ratchford and Myler will play at halfback, but the problem is Ratchford is twice a player at fullback as he is at halfback at the moment. In an ideal world for both Warrington and England, I mean, I think Ratchford should be a six, but he's not quite clicking there yet, and I think that's a big problem. You know, Warrington have lost three of the four home games so far this season. I think that's
not the sort of form which we've come to expect, really, of Warrington over the last few years, is it?
You know, and I was there Friday, you know, to get beat 25-12 at home by OK. I was there Friday, and the crowd was really subdued.
Yeah.
You know, this crowd, you know, I mean, obviously I live in Warrington, and, you know, the club and the town is unrecognisable now to 10 years ago, you know, 10, 15 years ago. You know, the rugby club to be getting 10, 11, 12,000, and everywhere you look around the time, there's Warrington Wolves, you know. And that's kudos to the club. But in the past 4 or 5 years, the 12,000 that have been packing out the ground have been used to seeing, you know, exciting rugby and a winning team. And this season at home, what they've been served up hasn't been great. And you sort of got that impression on Friday that people were getting a little bit frustrated. You know, there wasn't much noise. I mean, Hull KR, it was a really good game. I really enjoyed the game. I mean, I think it was 0-0 for 30-odd minutes, and the crowd never really got going. They never really got into it. And you could sort of sense that maybe the crowd themselves are starting to get a little bit worried about, you know, where they're going this season. But like you say, does it matter about how you're doing now? If you can stick around that top four, which I'm sure Warrington will finish in the top four, come the playoffs and it all comes together, then that's all that matters.
Could you say that at the moment they're going through a bit of a Hull FC with regards to the halfback pairings, because they've tried two or three players in those key positions, haven't they, and it's not fully gelled for them yet?
Yeah, I think they've got, Ratchford and Myler have played together at Salford years and years ago. The difference is now is that was 5 years ago, and you're expecting them players to have a bit more responsibility and a bit more experience, and I don't think they've decided which one of them's the senior halfback, you know. Whereas when Braze played, he'd always be the senior halfback and Myler would be playing off him. I don't think Myler's the sort of player who would ever be a senior halfback. He's always the off-the-cuff support runner. And I felt a bit sorry for Richie on Friday, because everything he tried, it didn't seem to come off. And then it looked like he was making the mistakes and he was trying his hardest, but it just wasn't working out for him. And I think at the moment there seems to be a bit of distance between him and Ratchford that needs sorting out. But like you say, that might only come, you know, with games. And you know, I mean, I think, you know, Russell's a really good signing, and I think, you know, as a long term option at fullback, it will work. But what happens in 12 months' time if they figure out that actually Ratchford needs to be the fullback? Are you going to then say, well, we're going to have to get rid of Ratchford, because, you know, he'd walk into most teams in the league?
And obviously Russell's just agreed a new long term deal, hasn't he, with the Wolves? So, yeah, there's going to be chops and changes there, isn't there? In that the case, talking about a club with plenty of chops and changes, Salford Red Devils. Now we could spend an hour talking about them on their own, couldn't we? Because of the way that it's gone and the circus that Marwan Kukash has created there.
Listen, I mean, everyone's got an opinion on Kukash.
I like him, to be honest. Yeah, he's certainly getting people talking,
you know,
about him.
And that's what it is. I mean, I hate people shouting him down because he's giving us things to talk about. That is absurd. You know, you look at football, you know, what are people talking about in football? And it's always there's always talking points in football, and that is because the people in football generate the talking points. Mm. In rugby, there's this habit of no one talks to anyone, a bit like no one spends any money, and as such, nothing ever gets done. Whereas Kukoc has come in, and yeah, some of the things that he's trying to do are a little bit...
They're off the wall, aren't they, really?
Yeah, they're a little bit...
In comparison to perhaps where we've been used to.
Yeah, you know... But at the end of the day,
he's challenging the status quo as well, isn't he?
And he's putting his money in, and he can do what he wants, you know. And I think, well, good on him, you know. If the other chairman think, oh, why is he doing all this? Because I know some of them are, but you know, they it's up to them to do what they want with their club, and just like it's up to him to do what you know with his club. I do have a little bit of sympathy for Brian Noble, you know, because his name's sort of been. Not dragged through the mud as such, but maybe he just wasn't the right appointment, you know, for Kukoc at the time. I think maybe Noble was a couple of years ago, he'd have been a good appointment, but I think with this team that he's trying to put, I think if you were a Wakefield or you were a Bradford who was trying to grind out results this season, I think Noble would have been your man. But to spearhead a team of Galacticos, if you like, you need someone maybe with a fresh, you know, a bit of a, you mentioned Widnes and Casford, who's the coach of Widnes and Casford, too. British coach, you know, two relatively young British coaches. And I think that's I think he's probably looked at them two clubs and thought, actually, Yeston Harris might be a good option, especially with him bringing Shane Flanagan in from you know, former Cronulla coaches. He's coming in to help. Whether that's a case of he'll be the backup if it all goes wrong, who knows? But you know, at the end of the day, Salford, it's an interesting project. I don't think they can buy success. But at the end of the day, it's money into the game. And if we had, well, this is a scary thought, but if we had 14 Marwan Kukoc's, you know, rugby league would be better off in terms of revenue. I just hope that he sticks out for the long term and it's not just a flash in the pan job.
Hull Kingston Rovers sitting outside the eight. What do we make of them so far this year?
You know, I was quite worried about Hull KR sort of earlier in the season. I've seen them a couple of times sort of in the first couple of games and they were really... You know, really a bit lethargic and a bit not underdone as such, but I did fear for Craig Sandercutt because they have struggled, you know, since he's taken over. They've had really good patches, but then they've really struggled. They've always ended up behind the eight ball almost, you know. By the time they've clicked into gear and actually put some good form together, it's been too late. Obviously, they had the loss of Michael Dobson, which is a massive loss, but I was really impressed with Chris Keaton on Friday night against Warrington. Him and Travis Burns linked up pretty well, and you know, to beat Warrington away is a pretty good victory, and I think they've backed that up. I think they beat Bradford, didn't they, a couple of weeks ago, so they're starting to click now. So maybe these plays that Sandercock's put together, I mean, he doesn't like the Easter programme, he moans about it all the time. He'll be hoping they can beat Hull FC on Thursday night.
Well, the Easter programme could be something that, you know, is the down the pan this time next week, because I know they're having a big review of it, aren't they?
Yeah, by the looks of it, it will be no more from next season, which is going to be interesting because they've got to squeeze in three extra games. So I think the talk is that the Challenge Cup, Super League teams are coming around later, won't they, in the Challenge Cup. So there's one weekend free, but that only replaces the Easter weekend. So I don't know, we might be going games in January next season, Dave.
Summer rugby, you can't beat it, can you? Huddersfield Giants have been perhaps the most inconsistent of the expected front runners so far this year. Where's it gone wrong for him?
I read an interesting comment actually on Love Rugby League on our loverugbyleague.com Facebook page on earlier this week, I should say, saying that it was actually Nathan Brown's, because of Nathan Brown that Huddersfield won the league last season. It was his team that he'd put together.
Oh, interesting.
And that was a theory that actually I'd never actually heard anyone come up with that theory before.
But Paul Anderson did bring a few players into that,
yeah,
squad,
I think,
didn't he?
Anderson did was he sort of tried to replicate the success Bradford had, didn't he, in the early 2000s, where they had a massive pack and basically just run amok around that pack. This season, where's it gone wrong? I'm not sure. You know, is it a case of people have figured them out? You know, realistically, they've got a fairly simple game plan, haven't they? They'll bat you in the forwards, and then that means Danny Brough's got a lot of space to work around it. Maybe they're just losing a few wrestles in the forwards, and you can tell because Brough gets frustrated, and that's always been maybe his downfall in his game, is when the chips are down, he gets a little bit frustrated. Last season, the chips were never down. He was running around like, you know, like a kid in a sweet shop most of the season, and that's why he was the man of steel. Whereas this season, because it's not going overly well, he's starting to get frustrated.
Do you think teams are also targeting him more?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, as a halfback, you're always going to get targeted anyway. That's just part of the game, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, he's always going to be targeted. I think maybe But I think maybe they didn't recruit very well, did they? I mean, to sign two players from the bottom club, you know, after you've won the league, is that the best way to go? I mean, I know Wigan signed two players from London, but they were two young Londoners. You know, yeah, they weren't
hungry.
They weren't Calfusi and Bailey, two Australians who sort of
coming
to the end of
their best
career.
Years behind yeah. them already. Oh.
And maybe that's maybe it's. Maybe Brough is being targeted, but maybe it's a case of the pack isn't given the foundation for him to run about as much as he has done. And Huddersfield are certainly maybe last season was just a freak season for them, and they sort of back to their level again now, which is sort of definitely a top eight club, but between five and eighth, not first and fourth.
I hope you don't mind me bunching the last four clubs together, because they've all been much of a muchness as far as I'm concerned. Wakefield, Catalan, London Broncos and Bradford Bulls. Now, for me, Catalan Dragons seem to be the team on the rise at the moment. They've picked up a couple of good results recently. They seem to be hitting a little bit more form and certainly turning the home ground into a bit of a fortress again.
I think everyone overreacted slightly about Catalan because they had a tough opening. I think they've played five away games, haven't they, out of seven? And obviously they're a total different kettle of fish at home. So I think there was a bit of an... I don't think they were ever going to finish in the bottom two. That's another debate, whether that would be a good thing or not. But yeah, they'll pick up. They'll be fine. They'll get away from it. They'll probably win the majority of their home games. And, you know, to be honest, if you're winning 12 or 13 games, you're probably on the cusp of the top eight. You know, certainly nowhere near the bottom two. London, will they ever win a game this season? I'm not convinced.
At the moment, they're lining up alongside the worst ever Super League teams, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's just an absolute travesty of a season, really. I mean Bradford, it's a shame what's happened there. They're appealing this points deduction now, so a lot's going to rest on what happens with that, because at the moment they're, you know, the minus two, aren't they? What are they 6 points adrift of the team in 12th place? So the thing with Bradford is, I sort of think, is this appealing for the deduction, appealing against the deduction, a distraction? I just think it's a distraction they don't need. I know that it's a case of, well, you've got nothing to lose, but then I just sort of think it sends out the wrong attitude, doesn't it? I mean, how long is it going to take for them to find out? You know, whereas they could be concentrating on getting the wins on the board in the meantime. You know, by the time they find out, they could have picked up 6 points as it is. And I don't think, you know, Salford last week was a game that they really should have been winning at home. And I think realistically, Wakefield are going to be the only team they can catch.
Wakefield are scoring a lot of points, but they're conceding a lot as well.
Yeah, Wakefield, they've always been a bit like that, haven't they, Wakefield? I don't know whether they're still looking over their shoulder a bit. I think they know now, looking at how Casford and maybe Widnes, you'd have thought maybe would have been down there, the way they've started, they're probably home and dry now. You know, Wakefield are probably looking at them thinking, boom, we're already 6 points behind these two, 6 or 8 points behind these two. You know, can we see ourselves getting 6 to 8 points on them two? The thing with Wakefield, what Wakefield have traditionally been good at, they always beat the teams around them. So when it comes to Wakefield v Bradford later in the year, I think Bradford have beaten them though this season, haven't they? But when it comes to a big game later in the year, would you back against Wakefield?
You're listening to the Final Hooter Rugby League on Radio General, Hospital Radio for Warrington and loverugbyleague.com.
Yes, and welcome back to the Final Hooter. And I tell you what, we have had a real good chinwag there, haven't we, James, about the Super League. We're going to move on to the Championship. And again, where would you summarise this one? I mean, this is where it all seems to be happening. Five teams dropping out of the division. Big money up at the top of the competition. And everybody chasing that ninth spot so that they can survive.
Yeah, it's going to go all the way, isn't it? With them bottom. There's probably, apart from the top maybe four clubs, you're looking at the other ten are fighting for... What is it? The other five spots, aren't they? And you know, you look at the table at the moment, and you've got all three Cumbrian clubs in there: Whitehaven, Workington, and Barrow. And it'd be a real travesty if none of them make it into the cut for the second division of 12 next season. At the top, you know, I'm sure you'll tell everyone that Lee are doing all right. They've won 7 out of 7. Are they the team to beat? Probably. It's usual suspects, isn't it, in that league? You know, Lee, Featherstone, Halifax and Sheffield, although I know Sheffield are having problems at their new ground, aren't they, because the pitch is I think the pitch is a little bit smaller, isn't it?
Much smaller.
And they've had to sort of adapt their style of play, which has sort of, I think, caught Mark Aston out a little bit, because I don't think he realised how much of an impact it would have.
And they've got such a quick back line for that level of rugby league, haven't they, Sheffield? So it's really diminishing their game somewhat.
Yeah, it's one of them things that actually you probably don't, you know, if you're a fan or you're trying to have an appreciation of what a coach has to think about when he's putting tactics or whatever together, the size of the pitch probably doesn't come into your reckoning. But actually, you know, and as Sheffield are finding, it does have a little bit of an impact, especially when you play the way that they play. So it'd be interesting to see. I know he's made a couple of signs, hasn't he, recently, to maybe address that problem. But it'd be interesting. I think they've won the last two grand finals, haven't they?
They have, yeah.
So, you know, they'll be looking for a hat-trick this year, but it's going to be a tough ask for them.
We spoke about the championship, and you mentioned about Lee Centurions doing pretty well. It was certainly the game of the season so far as I was concerned, over at the Shea on Sunday, when the Centurions fought back from 24 points to nil down to win by 36 points to 28. This was despite both sides going down to 11 men at one point due to a spate of yellow cards which were dished out, which had the Halifax coach Carl Harrison spitting feathers after the game about certain refereeing decisions that did or didn't go for his side, and that left Paul Rowley purring. I caught up with Paul after the game, and this is what he had to say.
24-0 down, people could be excused for, you know, having the deja vu from this time last year, but we're made of stern stuff. I got some stern messages down myself, and you know, I thought we'd been beating every facet of the game. They had about 16 sets on a row with 100% completion. We were 5 from 10 at 50% completion, obviously. So they were doing to us what we wanted to do to them, playing very similar game plans, as it were. Both felt there were some flaws in each other's middle unit. And, but the fact that they got possession and took too much energy out of us, and obviously they posted points. I said they would. That wasn't a surprise. But we needed a change in fortune, and that came in the way of a fight. And you know, we just showed that we ain't going to get bullied. And if it took a scuffle to get us going, then that ignited us. And I don't have any problems with that. We'll stand up. We ain't going to go anywhere and get bullied. And that was important for us today. And That was a strong message from us today as well. So on the back of that, we got our possession up to 80% in the second half, and we showed what we can do to teams as well, 12 men or not. It was a tough game today, two very, very good sides, and yet again another great championship advertisement. I think I think if you were neutral, you'd have enjoyed today. I think obviously Lee enjoyed it in the end, but we've been on our first year of batterings from Halifax, so you know, We're clawing them back, and we're levelling it up slowly but surely.
So that was Paul Rowley speaking in the wake of the Centurions' 36 points to 28 defeat of Halifax. As he mentioned, the Halifax went into 24 points to nil. Brachek, Devorty and Fieldhouse with two tries in the first half. Sam Barlow dragged one back for the Centurions just before the interval. And then in the second half, well, it was tables turned. Tommy Goulden went over early on. He was followed over the line by what was seen as a fairly controversial try from Matty Sarsfield. And then you had Ryan Briley stepping up for two tries to put the game beyond Halifax, with Tom Armstrong just nudging the Centurions in front when it mattered. Ridyard kicked 6 goals from 6, and although Halifax scored a late try through Heaton, it was only just consolation. What have you made of Ryan Briley? Because he seems to be the player that everybody's talking about with regards to Championship. Lee have already fended off interest from Salford this season.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him a couple of times. He's quite a good... He's quick, isn't he? And he's a real backup player, but that's not to say that he can't create as well. I think him and Ridyard are probably, we talked about duos, didn't we, earlier, and they complement each other quite nicely. You know, Ridyard's got a really good kicking game, and that enables Briley to do the running. So I think to have them two players clicking is part of the reason why Lee will be having the success they are. In terms of moving forward for him, there's not that many young English halfbacks, is there? And, he came through Casford, I think, didn't he, Briley? You know, maybe he's got a point to prove after not giving a chance there. And that's ultimately what it's all about, isn't it? Bringing through, giving players the opportunity, and he'll be hoping that maybe next season at a higher level, even. You know, if Lee step up, well, I suppose it'll be in the same tier in a way, but it will hopefully be of a better standard. He'll be looking to create a chance for himself, and whether he ends up in Super League with Lee or whether he ends up in Super League with somebody else. I'm sure it's pretty flattering to be linked with Salford, given that they're trying to go out and sign anybody and everybody. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
The Kingstone Press Championship one, that's also warming up at the moment. Hunslet seem to be the team leading the way. They're scoring plenty of points, and they've got a point to prove, haven't they, after being relegated last year?
Well, we were talking about this earlier, that Hunslet are in sort of the box seat, aren't they? They've actually come off smelling of roses after getting relegated, because there's a space reserved for a Championship 1 team to move up into the second division of 12 next season. And as it is, you'd rather be in Hunslet's position than be in, say, Rochdale's position, because, you know, Rochdale, who got promoted last season, have actually got to finish in the top 9 of the Championship, which is a pretty tall order, whereas Hunslet have, and that's in no disrespect to the other teams in Championship 1, Hunslet have got a pretty easy ride to get through to the playoffs and the grand final, really, in that league. There's only really York, maybe Oldham at a push, who are going to give them any bother in that league. And so that means that, from Hunslet's point of view, well, they've got, I mean, the pressure's still on because they've got to do the job, but they know that if they do the job, that they've got this golden ticket of the second division next season.
Interesting to note that, from an expansionist point of view, that Hemel Stags are currently in the playoff positions, as are Gloucestershire All Golds, with Oxford and London Scholars just tucked behind them. But sadly, when you look at the rest of the competition, Gateshead have been conceding quite a lot of points, although they have been improving over recent weeks. And South Wales Scorpions, I suppose they've been in a similar sort of position to London Broncos, where they've had to start that club again virtually.
Yeah, I think South Wales is an interesting one, isn't it? They've had a fairly turbulent couple of years. I think last weekend they lost a few players that were playing in the Wales student. There was a student in the Nationals, and they had a few players that were missing from there. So they've had obviously a few issues with players this season. It's a bit of a shame, that, for them. I mean, I don't think anybody really knows what's actually going to happen to those teams that miss out on the top 24 yet. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. I'm sure all the clubs in that level, that there's issues with travelling, isn't there? And you know, for semi-pro players and part-time players to have to do as much travelling as they do in that division. But like you say, it's expanding the game, and maybe, you know, maybe next this time next year we'll have a North and South division at that level.
Interesting. I think you've seen something somewhere along the lines. It is, of course, Easter. It's the time when, you know, lots of clubs are doubling up, particularly Super League clubs. The Championship clubs, they've already only got one particular game over the course of this weekend. I'm going to go to an interview here, and Steve Manning, our man in the know, was over at Langtree Park earlier this week. He caught up with Lance Ahia.
It is a big one. I know that there's the other derbies, but this is a one perhaps that means the most. There's always a full house, whether it be at Langtree Park or whether it be at the DW.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, I know the history there between the two towns and the two clubs. So, you know, a sellout crowd is going to be great, you know, to play in front of. And, you know, I'm sure that their fans will be very vocal, and our fans will be doing the same. So we've had a good start to the training week today, and we're building up nicely for Friday.
And the corresponding fixture last year, you drew a win from the depths of defeat, I think, at Joe Greenwood, and again in the last seconds to win the game here at Langtree.
Yeah, I remember that well. You know, we played well that day, and, you know, it's going to be no different. They'll turn up with a good attitude, Wigan. They always do for these games and the majority of the games they play. So, you know, we've got a lot of confidence in the team at the moment, and the boys are playing some good football. So, looking forward to it.
Are you going to be playing on the day?
Yes, I'll be playing, and looking forward to you know, battling it out with the Wigan lads. There's a lot of confidence in the team at the moment, and we've got some great players, you know, from 1 through to 17. So, you know, I'm sure we'll get out there and give a good performance, and hopefully that's enough to get us 2 points.
And it's this unbeaten run. Do the players feel under any pressure as such, you know, because the start you've made is a hell of a lot different from last year?
It's not talked about, to be honest. You know, we sort of understand that we're doing a good job and we've started the year well, but I think definitely over the last 2 weeks we haven't been anywhere near our best, which is, you know, you come off the field feeling thankful that you've got the 2 points, but disappointed with the way that we've played. So You know, it's been sort of a bit of a grounding couple of weeks for us, you could say, and everyone's been working hard at their game, which is what you want, and sometimes you need those games as a bit of a wake-up call. So hopefully we can, you know, put a good 80-minute performance together this week.
On Easter Monday, you travel to Widnes Vikings, who were rejuvenated, albeit that they went down at the Catalan Dragons at the last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the last, starting with Cass, we're playing, you know, all the top five sides over the next month. So, you know, that's a good way for us to test ourselves, and we have to be focused and at our best to really get the points in those matches. So it starts this week, I guess, with Wigan, and then we, you know, regroup and see how we go after that.
Wigan Saints games are always big games. I think it's a sellout as well, isn't it? I think they've posted the sold-out signs quite a few weeks ago at Langtree Park, so it'll certainly be a good game, especially because Saints are 8-8 and Wigan are the reigning champions, so it will be a big game, and I'm sure Lance is looking forward to it, given that his encouraging form over the past couple of games in particular.
Next, our man Steve Manning caught up with Wigan boss Sean Wayne.
So you've won your last four now, so you go into this game full of confidence, perhaps undercooked with some of the opposition you had compared to who Saints have played.
Yeah, possibly. You know, there's no doubt that we're under the pump this week against St Helens, and they're telling everybody that they've got the best back line in the comp and they're unbeaten, so it doesn't seem like there's much point us turning up. So we'll be going and trying to have a dig and hopefully shock them.
I suppose that's like a red rag to a bull to yourself, with all due respect, Sean, and perhaps your back line.
Yeah. Well, I hope they'll take it that way, and I'm sure they will. And we spoke about it and explained some of the comments coming out of St Helens. So, you know, they're a quality team. There's no doubt about that. They're very well coached, and they're unbeaten. So, you know, we're under the pump. There's no doubt about that. We've got a real challenge ahead. But, you know, we'll go there and just trying to do our best.
And I know you focus on your own side sort of thing, but now they're showing, after a couple of years, that now they can play till that last second and win to the last second of days of yore for the Saints.
Yeah, well, they've done something all weekend. We beat Castleford at Castleford. It was a very exciting game, and, you know, probably a bit the best team lost, but, you know, they hung in their St Helens, and, you know, they're sure what a quality team they are. But as we know, there's nothing won yet, and we'll see how they go at the end of the year.
What have you got to do to beat them this weekend?
Keep hold of the ball and get your shapes on consistently throughout the game. There's no point for 10 minutes here and there. You need to be consistent against St Helens and deal with their individuals. They've got a very athletic team, and you need to make sure that you can defend against their strong individuals.
You've said about tinkering with the team over the Easter period, but will you try and focus on as strong a team as you can for this game at Saints? Because it, apart from, you know, I know it's about 2 points, but it's about everybody feeling happy, yourself and the fans when they go over there.
Well, this is more than 2 points, this game. There's no doubt about that. You know, there's a real fierce rivalry. You know, we have a lot of respect for the people in St Helens Club, and they're for us as well. But, you know, when it comes into a game, you know, we want to win that game at all costs, and they feel the same way. So, and that's what's going to make it such an important game for both towns.
And then on Easter Monday, Bradford Bulls, perhaps on paper that's one where people might think, well, it's going to be like London Broncos, you should get the 2 points.
Yeah, and people said that against when we played London, so we won't be taking them for granted. You know, Bradford have some good players, and, you know, they're going to double up after a tough game as well, so they're in the same position, but our record over Easter has been 100%. We take it very seriously, and we want to make sure it keeps on going.
And finally, as far as our interviews go for this particular show, let us now hear Steve in conversation with Widnes Vikings boss Dennis Betts.
Well, Dennis, bad day at the office at Catalans.
It was a tough afternoon. Again, we just underperformed. We just had enough too many players that didn't play to their potential and didn't play well. I think it's just it wasn't an attitude thing. It was more of an application. We just failed to turn up and play as well as we know we can.
They got off to a great start, but you came back into it. But crucially, those two tries that gave them the 8-point buffer at half time didn't help the cause.
No, it's again, we were the masters of our own downfall, really. Catalan kept getting stronger and stronger on the fact that we were just giving them opportunities. We were coughing over ball, our chase was poor, our contact skills were down, so they were able to offload, and they got phase after phase, which drained our energy. They bounced out the tackles, which gave them another opportunity. So there was no single effort in any kind of tackle. It was multi-phase stuff that saps your energy.
I think you touched it on the press conference, only 32% completion rate in the second half. And even me as a layman realises that you can't win a game in that kind
of... No, you can't. You can't. And we almost got on, we got a couple of opportunities to get back into the game. But again, we've just unforced errors and really, like I say, just really poor application and a lot of things that we did. I think that's just our mental approach to the game, and we've asked the lads to make sure that the focus is better and we're stronger in those kind of things. And yeah, the lads weren't happy with their own performances. A lot of them know that they've got to play better, and it's the standards that we're pushing for this year that we need out of them.
And I suppose it's not helped, obviously, injuries in that game coming into this crucial period, because it's not a two-game period, it's the one before and the one after, and you've got some big tough games coming up over this next couple of weeks.
Oh, it's four games in 2 weeks. It's a massive, massive to ask for such a... Like, even if you've got everybody fit in your 25, 28 people, then it's a big ask. But if you're struggling with some bumps and bruises, especially around our halves and a couple of outside backs, then it's an even bigger ask. But you just got to get on with it, and we'll patch everybody together, and we'll keep rolling out there and trying to put the best performances we possibly can in.
So it's all about player management. So from that point of view, Warrington first, they're coming off the back of the defeat. Is it you put your strongest side out and then see what happens going into Monday, or is that maybe negative thinking?
No, it's just that I think you've got to play what's in front of you. You've got to have an idea of what you want to do about it, and you've got to look beyond that, especially with the Challenge Cup and how important that is the week after. So to turn into this period and know that you've got a tough couple of games over Easter and then playing a Super League side in the Challenge Cup, and you want to be in the draw, but you've got to feel for the sides that playing those sides that are out of the draw. Like sides that play in Huddersfield know that they've got a weekend off after Easter.
They can have a rest, so to speak, or recover.
They've got a recovery weekend after Easter, so they can go for both their games. But yeah, it's a bizarre way of managing things. You've got to have an idea, but you can't be too smart. You've got to pick a side that you feel is going to get you the result that you're after.
And you got the double over them last year, and it'll count for nothing, but the Vikings fans will be hoping, relishing that they can do the business initially on Friday.
I think what happened last year has been great for us. They'll be using it as a tool to motivate them, and we'll be looking at how we can actually apply ourselves this year and know that this is an important game for us after, like say, after a drop-off in our application on the weekend.
We can have a look at these fixtures, can't we, and just sort of pick our way through them. I mean, it all starts off when Bradford take on Leeds, Hull Kingston Rovers take on Hull FC, and London Broncos take on the Catalan Dragons.
The thing with the Easter weekend is, you know, I think I wrote a piece this week actually on coach moans about it, and I think a lot of the Australian coaches don't like playing the two games, and it's actually the first round of games are usually really good because they're usually derby games. So like you say, we've got Bradford Leeds, Hull KR Hull tomorrow, Salford, and Huddersfield's not much of a derby, but that's an interesting game. We've got Saints Wigan, Wakefield Casford and Warrington Widnes on Friday, so them as a round of games, they are a very good selection of games. The problem is on Monday, when everyone's being battered and bruised in the derbies, is the quality of the game seems to drop. So That's a slight problem for the game and for the quality of rugby on show. So I think a lot of whether coaches go, I mean, without knowing how coaches go into the weekend, I think if you come out the weekend with one win out of two, you'd be relatively happy given the circumstances. You know, two wins out of two has a real chance of catapulting your season. You look at Huddersfield, they've had a difficult start. They've only registered two wins and two draws. They play Salford and Wakefield over Easter, so there for Paul Anderson, he'll be looking at this thinking, well, we could get two wins here.
You'd think you'd be targeting it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and then they're going to be 4 points better off. So yeah, I mean, like I said, it was interesting actually because there's a few coaches who are quite supportive of Easter, and Paul Anderson's one of them, and he seems to have a quite favourable fixture list, whereas Dennis Betts is quite outspoken against the Easter programme. And they're playing Warrington and St Helens, so I don't know whether the RFL fixture planners are having a little bit of, making a bit of mischief, because another critical coach is Craig Sandercock at Hull KR.
Okay.
And they play Hull, obviously, yeah, in the derby on Thursday, and then they have to travel to France on Monday. So,
and I mean, that's always a, you know, a heavy challenge, isn't it, that, because
I mean, to play Hull FC in a derby on Thursday night and then have to fly to France to play, you know, the French team in the south of France on Monday, you know, it's hard enough going to Catalan on a standalone weekend, let alone a couple of games after a couple of days after you've been battered and bruised by, you know, your fiercest rivals.
What do you make of the Widnes Warrington game, because the last time those two sides played was an absolute corker.
Yeah, so, I mean, Widnes won both the games last season against Warrington. You know, they won on Good Friday. I think it was 38-22 on Good Friday last year. That was at Widnes, and that was actually Widnes' biggest ever win over Warrington in Super League. And then you remember the one at Halliwell Jones later on in the season where Widnes won 16-6 with 12 men. So, Widnes had sort of a candle to Tony Smith's men last season. I think it might be a bit different this season. If you look at the record between the two sides in Super League, they seem to pass the book every year, so one club will win both one year, then the next year it'll be the other club. And think maybe, you know, given that Widnes won them both last year, maybe it's Warrington's turn this year. Warrington at home, they'll be desperate to put on a show for their fans. Like you said earlier, they've lost three or four games at home, and if you added a defeat to Widnes onto that, I'm sure there'll be a few dissenting noises on Friday. Widnes, I've got a few injury problems. You know, Warrington have got a few injury problems as well. You know, Widnes won with 12 men, didn't they, in August. Joe Mellor was one of the standout players. He's out long-term injured, so he's a massive miss for Widnes at the moment.
What's been said about Mellor? What's, you know, sort of the prognosis there? Have you heard at all?
It was a dislocated shoulder, I think. So
can take some time to heal,
can't
it?
Yeah, so you're talking a good 12 weeks for that. For that heel, so I'm trying to remember what game he did it in. It was I think it was against Leeds, so that was maybe 4 weeks ago, so he's still got a good probably five,
good
six,
four or five weeks
at least before he comes back. So and Widnes have had a few, they've not been the same team without him. You know, they've had a good start to the season, but you know, they've not been the same team without him. So and Warrington are missing, I think Paul Wood and Simon Grix got injured last week against Hull KR, so they're missing. Ben Westwood's missing. So it's I suppose it's working out which absences are going to have the most impact. I'd probably say Mellor's absence for Widnes is a bigger absence than maybe Grix and Woody's for Warrington. Warrington play Casford on Monday, so you know, they might, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how coaches look at it. I'd imagine that Dennis Betts is probably looking at it. I think Dennis Betts said he's probably looking at the Warrington game as a winnable game for Widnes, and then maybe writing off the Saints game on Easter Monday. Is that the right attitude to have? I'm not sure it is, but you know, Widnes have got its Challenge Cup next weekend, and Widnes are playing Salford, so he's probably looking at it thinking, well, actually, we want to progress in the Challenge Cup, and I don't want to suffer injuries against Warrington and St Helens and then compromise that fixture. So
I think it's unfortunate, to be honest, how, you know, you just sort of get to this point where almost teams are writing off certain games and just picking the games where they're going to try and attempt to perform. It's a risky strategy, really, for me.
Well, Widnes did it last season, and as much as Dennis Betts says that he had no choice, I'm sure he did have a choice. You know, I think last season they beat Warrington on Good Friday and then got absolutely walloped by Huddersfield on the Monday. You know, and that's like, well, they played a weakened team, but, you know, Dennis Betts is saying that he had no choice. You know, the players were hurt and he had to put some youngsters in. Whether that's him making a point, I think in the first year back, Widnes got walloped by Bradford on Easter Monday after I think they'd played Warrington. They would have played Warrington on a Good Friday, and they would have got beat that year. But you know, you're just sort of thinking, you know, can you be a four? But I think that's the format of the league. I think it's a problem with the format of the league. I don't think it's necessarily a coach's fault, because you've seen Warrington do it, haven't you? Even at the top end of the league, they've wrote off games, thinking, well, you know, the prime example was the year before last when they were in the Challenge Cup final. They completely wrote off a game against London Broncos and got battered 60-odd.
Yeah, because I mean that was London's best result of the season, wasn't it?
And
at that stage.
And you know, that's a week before the Cup final, because Tony Smith knows that he can afford to write off a game because it's not going to make a massive difference come the end of it. And maybe, you know, maybe Dennis Betts will look at Widnes v St Helens and think, well, actually, you know, not many people would give us a chance of getting the 2 points anyway, so why don't we just sort of surrender them and make sure the players are right for next week.
James, just run us through the rest of the fixtures for the bank holiday.
So, Super League Monday, Casford Warrington, Catalan Hull KR, Huddersfield versus Wakefield, Hull versus London Broncos, Leeds v Salford, Widnes v St Helens, and Wigan v Bradford.
And if you're not of a Super League persuasion?
Yeah, the Championship. So I think the Championship playing Friday, so Barrow v Halifax. The kick-off times are all over the show in the Championships. You've got Barrow v Halifax, Dewsbury v Batley, Featherston v Keighley, Lee versus Swinton, North Wales Crusaders versus Rochdale, Whitehaven versus Workington, and on Sunday, Easter Sunday fixture for Sheffield versus Doncaster.
Oh, that's going to be a tasty one, as far as I'm concerned, anyway.
And then in Championship 1 on Friday, it's Gateshead versus York, Hemel versus London Scholars, Hunslet versus Oldham, and Oxford versus Gloucestershire All Golds.
Well, time's just about defeated us for this edition of The Final Hooter. My thanks to James.
That was The Final Hooter on loverugbyleague.com and Radio General, Hospital Radio for Warrington.